Welcome to Car Free Conversations. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of St. Pete without the use of a car. I'm Domenico.
And I'm Sumitra.
And with us today, we have Darden Rice, the PSTA Chief Planning and Community Affairs Officer. But most people know her as a city council member. She was previously on city council. Welcome, Darden. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be here on your show. Former city council member. Love being here at PSTA. I really feel like I've landed at the right place at the right time. And I hope I'm the right person.
Oh, you definitely are. We're happy to have you here. We love talking about the PSTA. All of us here are huge supporters of the PSTA. I don't know what the city would be like without the area, the county would be like without it. We'd like to start out with a little bit of an icebreaker. We're going to sort of quiz you about UPass. So why don't you start out by telling us what is UPass?
Okay. UPass stands for Universal Pass, and PSTA has these really incredible partnerships with different businesses, schools, the Pinellas County School Board, Historic Kenwood Neighborhood Association, in which we negotiate working with these entities where their members, their employees, their students, whatnot, are able to use like an ID card or a Flamingo card. And they basically, for the user, for the member, they're able to use it to get off and on all PSTA buses all year. It's free for them, but the price has been negotiated at a good deal for everybody. And this has been an excellent way, like, to help augment the Pinellas County school system and offer another way for students to safely and on time get back and forth. It's been great for certain employers where they can offer this fringe benefit to their employees, and it's another way to help people get to work. And it's something that we found has been really successful. We're absolutely delighted to be working with Historic Kenwood Neighborhood Association.
Yeah, you just mentioned that Historic Kenwood Neighborhood Association has this benefit. Who else is currently participating in the US UPass program?
Well, Historic Kenwood is a pilot program. It's the first ever neighborhood association PSTA has worked with. And PSTA were the number one mid-sized transit agency of the year. Mm-hmm. And so we have pioneered a lot of different projects here, which is really exciting. And this project with Historic Kenwood is an exciting pilot project as well. And already we've generated a lot of interest from other neighborhoods that want to do the same thing. So as soon as we start getting a better idea of what works, what needs tweaking, what maybe doesn't work, we'll be able to get out of the pilot phase and be able to open this up to more neighborhood associations.
And so who is eligible besides neighborhood associations? You mentioned companies, schools you mentioned. What determines the eligibility of an organization to take advantage of UPass?
Really, there's not a lot of restrictions. It's all negotiation. It's what kind of budget that business or agency or entity may have. We get a number of the number of passes that they need, and we figure out a per person charge, and we kind of take it from there. There's really not a restriction per se.
So if I'm an employer, I own a company. This is an option, benefit that I can offer to my employees, reaching out to PSTA and coordinating on possibly getting my employees a UPass.
Absolutely.
That would be an awesome benefit.
And if you think about it, especially at the beaches, there's a number of hotels, for instance, that have a lot of employees, and parking becomes very scarce, very expensive. And you know, I mean, ultimately, you don't want to have all that real estate on flat surface pavement for cars, especially with the limited real estate near the beach. So if we can rely on transit to get your employees there by bus instead of parking there, that's huge. And if you, like, for instance, if you live along the corridor of, like, say, the Sunrunner, you know, the average cost of an extra automobile in your household is about $9,000 a year. It's probably gone up a little bit. So there's a savings that you can help really start to articulate if a household doesn't have to have so many vehicles to pay for to get around.
Yeah, that's such a great idea, because I split my time between St. Pete and in Chicago. And a number of people in Chicago who live without cars because there is nowhere to park them is, and that's why transit flourishes here, because people use the transit as often as they can, because it's just easier to use it. And the easier we make transit for people to use in Pinellas County, the more people will also get to use the transit as well.
Absolutely.
Is there a minimum for number of users in an organization to be eligible for a U-Pass?
Off the top of my head, I don't believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Really, at a certain point, it really pencils out if you have more employees.
Yeah.
It just makes more sense because you're dealing with bigger numbers.
Yeah.
Well, let's switch gears now, if we can, and talk about some of the other work that is going on over at PSTA. Sumitra, why don't you get us started?
Yeah. Darden, first of all, we were so excited to hear that you were with PSTA. And you know, we know that you have a long history with the organization as you served on the board during your two-term tenure as the city council person. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey with the PSTA and what are your plans for the organization in your new position?
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, it's funny. You know, there's times in your life where you're like, how did I get here? I never realized one day I'd be working at a transit agency, working with buses or, you know, dealing with issues with cars. But I got my start very early on. When I first started working for the National Sierra Club, and I was a Florida-based representative lobbying senators and congresspeople in Florida to raise fuel efficiency standards for automobiles and trucks. And that was part of our global warming program and part of our program to protect America's special places from offshore oil drilling, places like the beautiful coast of Florida, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So, you know, corporate average fuel economy standards were one of the ways to help reduce our country's dependency on oil. And just through the years, that work, sooner or later, you know, I was the one person left in the room who happened to know the most about how hybrid car engines work, peak oil demand, ethanol subsidies, you name it. It doesn't matter how wonky it was. I had it all in my head. And it just kind of turned me a little bit into a perfect fodder for being a transit geek. When years later, when I was asked to consider running for St. Petersburg City Council, I was looking for some opportunities where I could branch outside of just environmental and voting issues and really kind of dip my toes into some work that would expose me to working on fundamental economic development issues. And the citizen representative position for PSTA was just a perfect way for me to apply and get involved, because I do think transit and transportation is one of the most foundational economic development issues ever for growing a city in the way that you want to grow it, with character and accessibility and affordability. If you're a community you don't want to live in that people are getting away from, you imagine places like LA and eight lanes of packed traffic or Atlanta traffic. That doesn't connote as a very high quality of life. But transit is also just a great way to start talking about economic development. At the same time, you get to talk about quality of life and the environment as well.
I agree. I think that's a great perspective to have. I think transportation is just the number one issue when you're talking about a city's growth, because without planning for that kind of infrastructure, like you said, you become defined by it, right? So if you don't plan sort of like a multimodal transportation plan, then you end up being sort of a slave to the motor vehicles, and then your city becomes known for its traffic, and that's not what you want to be. You know, you don't want to sacrifice a positive image of your city for the convenience of having more parking and more roads downtown. You know, I think it makes sense to plan, like you said. And I wish more people saw it that way.
And also when you're planning transportation projects, you're planning for the future, not for the present, right? And like a lot of people don't get that when we are planning these rapid transit bus routes or anything else, they are keeping in mind the future growth of the city, not how it affects us right now, which is so important.
Yeah, and it's that long-term view is so important, because the mistakes that are made are lasting mistakes, and they're very hard to undo. On the bright side, we have incredible opportunities.
Yes.
And so that's why I thank you for having me here today, because I know you guys are the audience for those people who are very passionate about working on what those opportunities are. But one thing St. Petersburg is wrestling with, as well as what many communities across the country are working with, is this legacy of highways that divided communities back in the 60s. Sometimes, intentionally, even in the 90s in St. Petersburg, after the race riots here, and there was, I forget how many millions of dollars of Hope 6 money, federal money, came to help rebuild St. Petersburg. A lot of that money that went into the transportation was actually used to build a wall so that you couldn't see Jordan Park driving by on 275. So it's heartbreaking to know that that money at that time was used not actually for a solution, but it was made to make poor people, people of color, invisible. And so undoing that type of damage, it takes a long time, but it's an important outcome that we have to keep working towards, is to undo that damage.
Sure.
Yeah, I know there is some coalition that is working on sort of reversing those mistakes, like the 375 spur. I know there's a study right now that I thought is doing.
I think Reimagine 175 is a neighborhood group, and there's been a few studies looking at alternatives to how 175 could be, you know, brought to grade so that it's not, you know, separating like Campbell Park and the South Side from the Tropicana Field gas plant area,
exactly,
and really has created a wall. We've had lots of conversations about how to better connect the community.
Yes, I'm right on the other side of that wall, so I am watching that closely. It would be nice to have a boulevard option or something. But
and it's interesting, you know, the 375 spur. I mean, it's like, How many spurs to the interstate does a city need? That was originally built. It was intended or thought that that would be one day a future like east-west nexus to the beaches, and that was never built. But the spur remained. But that's sort of the origin story of 375.
Interesting. An east-west corridor kind of would make sense, but it never happened, I guess. So,
I mean, we're doing that in the gateway.
Right.
And we have like the We have some other pretty major corridor streets that run east-west, but we definitely have, you know, more, at least in terms of highway, like more connectivity north and south.
I want to talk a little bit, if we may, about some of the sort of pushback against some of this smart planning. I do believe that a lot of it is rooted in a few things, right? Like the lack of understanding of long-term planning and maybe even just sort of it is kind of like a short-sightedness. But a little while ago, I guess, I created a petition I called it Support PSTA. And the aim was to sort of push back at some legislation that was written by Representative Linda Cheney to really shrink the PSTA and take a little bit of power away from them and limit what they can do. And luckily, that piece of legislation was killed by Senator Rusan, and so it did not go through. But from my understanding, there's still some effort at the state level to sort of almost like a spiritual successor of that legislation. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Do you know about this kind of the stuff that's happening? Because I know a lot of residents of St. Pete don't understand.
I know. Yeah. So transit finds itself sometimes, it's easy to pick on us. We are in a current political climate where there's a lot less civility, a lot less respect for accuracy. There's a strong anti-tax sentiment. And sometimes that translates. I mean, we always want to be responsible with taxpayer money. That's very important, something we take very seriously. But a lot of taxes are for investing in our community, whether it's paying for education, paying for roads, investing in fixing sewers for clean water. These are all investments in like the bones of our community, the infrastructure of our community that makes it possible for people to thrive and do well and live in communities. And you don't have to be rich to thrive and live in this community. You can have a really good middle-class way of life. You can be poor, but not have your health totally suffer because of the number of things you're exposed to because of low income. So sometimes we find ourselves easily picked on. And so it's my job to help show people the value of transit, even if a person never necessarily gets on the bus themselves, they do benefit from having their community having a robust community bus system. And so Representative Cheney did try to file a number of bills. Some of them succeeded, some did not. One bill would have like completely reordered and restructured our board of directors. And because PSTA is created by the legislature, we will always be protected by having at least one state senator from the Tampa Bay delegation that can stop any piece of legislation that would be aimed at kind of dismantling PSTA. So thank you, Senator Rusan. Some other bills, some other parts of the bill that did go through, now it requires a 2/3 vote of any agency to propose a bus and transit lane, or that would remove automobile lane, whether it be for a bike lane or a complete streets project or the bus and turn lane. That now goes from simple majority to 2/3 vote. That would probably impact our MPOs. Mostly PSTA, we don't own the roads. We operate cars on the roads. So we may not always be that agency taking that 2/3 vote. We have been impacted specifically by having to remove bus wraps, referring to Pride, Juneteenth, and this ultimately really led to FDOT ruling saying that we can't do bus wraps at all. It's a curious measure. It's hitting all of the transit agencies in the state. PSTA, I know we get about $1 million a year from our advertising budget from advertising on the exterior shell of the buses. That's a big hit to our budget. That was taken away. There's some other issues like 20% of our budget the administrative costs for our budget can't be more than 20% of what the state average is. Now, that was kind of aimed at the Jacksonville Transit Authority. I think our administrative costs for PSTA, we have a pretty lean and mean machine. I forget where we are. We might be at like 12%. We're well below 20. But as part of that, they're also requiring that the salaries of our top managers and directors be published on our website. So we're seeing that kind of thing. I mean, that's okay. I mean, that information is public access anyway. It's not a problem, but it does kind of go to serve a sort of an atmosphere of distrust. But on the good side, I will say that we have really only begun to really work with our pro-transit alliances and supporters like Car Free St. Pete. You guys came out in droves to one of the public hearings, and your presence really shifted the whole tone of the meeting. And so we've really only started to flex those muscles where the ordinary people that support transit, that support this type of community services, you know, once we get those voices out and those people talking more, I think you start to see the pendulum swing back. Listen, transportation's big. Our transit agency, our buses go all over the county. We touch everybody's ad valorem and taxes pay for us. Having a difference of opinions, having disagreement, it's okay. I welcome it. It's how we learn to be better, but let's be civil.
Yeah. I'm going to just pause for a moment. We are going to continue this conversation. You are listening to Car Free Conversations on Radio CEP, Sunshine 96.7. If you'd like to continue this conversation with us, head to radiocmp.com and click on the audio blogs button at the top, and you can find the full recording of this podcast. Now, Darden, you were just talking about some new legislation that has hit the state that's affecting public transit. One thing that you did mention was this issue of the bus wraps. And so you mentioned that there was legislation passed to restrict bus wraps, and that FDOT ruled that now no bus wraps are allowed. There's no sort of marketing allowed on buses.
On buses paid for with state funds, which would probably apply. Most of our funds are federal that pay for the new buses, but because we also get support from FDOT for other projects and service development grants, in effect, in the rulemaking process, FDOT said, let's just do away with advertisements.
So have they, did they also offer a solution to sort of make up for that loss in revenue that you're going to be, you're shaking your head no. So there's
no plan. No, they didn't.
that must be hard. Yeah.
And does it apply to wraps that have already been on the buses, like advertising wraps that have already been on the buses, or is it only for the new wraps?
We get to honor the contracts that we have. So it'll get kind of dialed back by attrition. So it's essentially like no new advertising.
Right. Switching gears a little bit, PSTA was recently awarded a large grant from FDOT.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how PSTA plans to use that grant funding, if you are at the freedom of sharing that at all?
We got almost a $28 million grant from the FTA, from the feds, for our federal low-no grant. We were one of the most competitive applications in the country. We worked closely with Gainesville and Jacksonville, who also got very large similar grants. Electric buses and hybrid electric buses. And part of those funds will also go towards workforce development training so that we will train new mechanics on how to work on electric buses and hybrids as well. So it's all very exciting. A big thank you to our Congresswoman Kathy Castor, who played a huge role in quarterbacking this effort. And we're very excited because this is a way that we're going to continue to green our fleet with a combination of 21 hybrid and electric buses.
Congratulations on the grant. That's really major.
Congratulations. Yeah, that's exciting. Huge. And goes towards that effort of relying less on oil. So that's great.
It really is. And, you know, there have been some national issues with, supply chain and some manufacturing issues with that slowed down the manufacturing of electric buses. There's also the Buy America legislation. So, we were encouraged to put in a request where we mixed our buying plans with hybrid and electric. But even so, the hybrids are a great step forward with helping to reduce our dependency and less diesel and an improvement in air pollution and a considerable savings in fuel.
Is there a timeline on when these new buses will hit the road, or is it too early to say?
Well, we're starting ordering now. The board approved our contract today. The timeline will space out the delivery of the buses, which is good because if you get too many buses to come online at once, we're not really doing a favor for the PSTA folks will be here 20 years from now because it'll force them to have a big crunch to replace 20 buses at once. And let me just say, we're very thankful for former Congressman Bill Young, who back in the age of earmarks, and he was the chair of the Appropriations Committee, he was able to help get PSTA a number of diesel buses and help us out a lot back then. But what's happening is that a lot of these diesel buses are now like very much at the end of their lifespan. So we're trying to kind of smooth out how we replace them so that, you know, it's not like the snake that just ate a big meal, if that makes sense. We're spreading it out, so it's going to be a lot easier budget-wise to anticipate these hits to our capital and operating expenses.
Yeah. And also with the electric buses, you also need to upgrade the system to have chargers at the depots where they're going to be situated so that they can be charged.
Absolutely.
As come on the road. Yeah.
And the technology is always changing. The electric buses have, you know, more and more of an improved range than even a few years ago. The technology with the batteries in particular are changing, the size of the batteries, the lifespan, the voltage. I would imagine, and that's also another reason why it's good not to buy all of our electric buses all at one fell swoop, because I imagine in the next few years, we're going to want to be versatile to be able to buy and take advantage of the newer technology. And as long as we can still charge them on the infrastructure and chargers we have, we'll be in good shape. But even the Chargers had gone through quite a revolution. Yes. Than what I remember we first saw, what maybe like, you know, seven.
I imagine, yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know what a charger for a bus looks like, but I imagine it's not small.
I have seen them here in Chicago, and they are kind of like the pantographs. So they come on top of the bus, and they charge it from the top, because I think the battery is on the top, if I'm not wrong. I could be wrong.
Yes. But. And there's there used to be induction chargers where the bus would drive over it like a big magnet. We're not doing that anymore. And then the new ChargePoint chargers actually looks like kind of like, it's pretty small. It's like a typical gas.
Mm-hmm.
Where you go and pump up gas, it'd be like half that size.
Mm.
And it takes us about 4 hours to completely charge a bus.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. Yeah. The Car for You St. Pete committee recently got an update from the PSTA team about the community bus plan. And I was curious if you could share a little bit about where that's headed and the next steps of that process.
The community bus plan it's very exciting. We are doing a complete deep dive system analysis into our entire bus plan. And we've been engaged in that effort for quite a while with Jarrett Walker Associates and have had some beginning community meetings. And one of the things that we want to do, first of all, this is going to be cost neutral, but we're looking at a way to improve the connections of all of our routes so that we can make things more clear, easier to navigate, more consistent, and improve the connections. One thing we'll be doing is looking at providing more weekend service. Ever since the pandemic, across the country, we've seen that there's a new latent demand on weekends. So we're looking at providing more weekend service. So buses are going to be running 7 days a week. We're looking at simplicity. Bus routes will run either 15 minutes, 30 minutes, or 60. We still have a lot of like 25-minute, 35-minute routes, and we're really just going to make that a lot more simplified. We're going to make greater use of transfers, so those 60-minute bus routes can connect to other routes, and there will be a guaranteed like 10-minute window connection so that you know when you get off at a certain stop, you know that you will be able to connect to another one. If you miss a connection now and you're talking about 60-minute routes, I mean, you can spend your whole day planning how to get around. And we just, that's just something we all really want to see get a lot better. We're looking at two new on-demand zones in North County. There's some areas in Dunedin and Clearwater where it's not enough ridership to justify a fixed route. But we do know there are riders there. So we're looking at ways that we can offer on-demand service, but we're not, you know, running buses into those areas. Then we're going to be getting into communications and outreach phase. There'll be a number of phases to that where we're really going to be showing people, hey, this is exactly specifically the changes we're looking at making. We're going to get feedback. We're going to figure out, oh, guess what? We can't do a transfer zone there. We're going to have to push that back, you know, another street, another 200 feet. We know we're going to have to make a lot of changes like that. That's fine. That's what this process is about. Lastly will be the implementation phase. Once we get board approval for getting the go to enact these route changes, we'll be doing that all at once, and that will probably be at least a month, maybe 2 months of no fares, free fares. We're going to be doing a lot of community outreach to get people comfortable with and learning the new system. And this is all for the goal of higher ridership and designing better routes to get more people to where they need to go. So we're very excited about it. It's going to be a lot of work. We're going to need all hands on deck. But it's these moments where it really is what it takes to kind of get a system that inherits a lot of legacy routes over the decades. And we get to kind of start clean and say, you know what, this is the new system that we need. So we're looking forward to hearing Carfree St. Pete's feedback on all of this. And I'm hoping about this time next year, we'll be talking about our new bus system.
And if I may sort of plug Carfree St. Pete here, if you're interested in being part of these conversations, not just about public transit, but about other sort of ways of getting around St. Pete, you can go to our website, carfreestpete.com. Is that correct? Yes, carfreestpete.com. I don't know, sometimes it's .org. You know, I don't know. carfreestpete.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow our Instagram. And we will keep you informed about opportunities where you can participate in these conversations.
Yeah, and Darden, thank you so much for all of that information. It is so vital that we broadcast like all of these plans that PSTA has to make the county more sustainable in terms of transit and just getting around the county. Is there anything else you would like for us to broadcast to the community? Is there something that we have missed?
Well, thank you, Sumitra, and thank you, Domenico, for the opportunity to talk about PSTA. I would say anybody watching who wants to learn more or is curious or maybe just hasn't gotten on the bus before, go to psta.net. You can contact us. We can work with you. We can walk through with you. You can come meet us here. We will help kind of be a navigator to help show you how to get around on the bus. Or if you're from a neighborhood that, you know, and you want to organize a group of people to like, hey, let's get the neighborhood engaged with getting people to learn how to use the bus to get around. We are always here. We're always happy to help out. Just reach out. I've got a lot of great people on staff who love working with the public. I would say, and just stay tuned. We're going to be working on a lot. We're very excited about some new ridership options. We're looking at more tourist options to help people who are visiting. And I think on the regional picture, when the Howard Franklin Bridge will be completed in the next 6 months, I think that's going to really ramp up the conversations about how we better connect the region and really having those really important conversations about what is it going to take to get commuter rail, you know, connect Brightline and then connect Tampa commuter rail to Pinellas. What does that look like? What is it going to cost? What is it going to take? And I'm hoping this is going to happen in our lifetimes. Hopefully, you know, it's something that can happen in the next 10 years. So it sounds like a long way away, but in the transportation world, 10 years is, I think, kind of par for the course for the really, really big projects.
And, you know, I was reading about Silver Star, which is the Amtrak service that connects Tampa to New York and to Miami. Mm-hmm. And I have taken it to go to Miami before. And I was reading about it because I was like, oh, I want to know the history of this train. And lo and behold, I found that in some cases, the train from New York came down to St. Pete via Clearwater after Tampa. And so there were some services in like 1980s and 50s, or no, yeah, it was between like maybe 50s and 60s or 50s and 70s that the train, some of the trains came down to St. Pete, and almost cried knowing that like that option was available, you know.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's interesting. And some of those old rail lines are now the Pinellas Trail. Rails, yep, to Trails. And we still have CX lines that, yeah, some of them are still used for freight. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of discussions. There have been discussions from time to time of how to use CX lines, like where it lines up with some of our transit corridors. Is there an option there to take advantage of? So.
Dalton, thank you so much for joining us
today. Thank you. It was a blast being here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.